In the tussle for military and economic dominance between China and the US, and we discussed that with Peter Martin before the news, what side should Australia take? Should we take a side at all? This week, Washington made its views clear. The visiting Secretary of State Mike Pompeo mocked anyone who, in his view, kowtowed to China, saying, "You can sell your soul for a pile of soybeans, or you can protect your people." Very blunt, undiplomatic words. Also in Australia this week was US academic John Mearsheimer from the University of Chicago, who told audiences that Australia has no choice but to align with the United States, to choose, as he put it, security over prosperity. Well, joining the chorus, Liberal MP Andrew Hastie, who warned Australia faces an unprecedented economic and national security test, his words, and likened the world's approach to containing China to the, quotes, catastrophic failure to prevent the rise of Nazi Germany. But if there's consensus that Australia can no longer simply sit on the sidelines, there's certainly less clarity on what the alternatives might be as America's leadership declines and China's arguably rises. Well, on Thursday, the Centre for Independent Studies hosted a debate between John Mearsheimer and Hugh White, Professor of Strategic Studies at the Australian National University in Canberra. The debate was moderated by my RN colleague Tom Switzer, and I'd like to play you an edited version now.
Let's first talk about the big news of the day. Andrew Hastie, the Liberal MP, he wrote an op-ed today in the Sydney Morning Herald, and the argument is that Australia is facing an unprecedented economic and national security test. He likened the world approach to containing China to the, quote, catastrophic failure to prevent the rise of Nazi Germany. Hugh White, what do you make of Hastie's remarks?
Well, he's come a bit late to the party in identifying the rise of China and the escalating strategic rivalry between the US and China as the biggest strategic challenge Australia faces. Some of us have been talking about that for a decade. or more. But welcome. It's also good to see that he's noting that it's more important than the war on terror. Good, I'm glad he's caught up with that argument. I don't think the appeasement metaphor, the Nazi Germany metaphor, is very helpful. Historical metaphors can sometimes be valuable, but they can also be a little bit distorting. The Munich metaphor has been used in relation to almost every international strategic crisis since 1938, and often it's produced very dumb outcomes. So I don't think that helps us very much. And I've got to say, from my reading of the op-ed, he didn't actually offer much in the way of advice as to what we should be doing about it.
Yeah, I just want to be clear, to sort of build on what you said, that I think comparing China to Nazi Germany was a foolish thing to do. China is an authoritarian system, and it has all sorts of aspects to its political system that somebody from a liberal democracy like me doesn't like at all. But China is not Nazi Germany, and I think it was not helpful at all, as you said, to make that analogy. I think what's good about the essay is that he points out that the policy of engagement which the West pursued, this includes Australians and especially Americans, towards China over the course of the post-Cold War period effectively helped create this monster. The idea was that we were going to trade extensively with China, make it rich, embed it in international institutions, and it was going to become, in Robert Zoellick's words, a responsible stakeholder. Well, what we did was we helped accelerate the growth of China. It didn't become a responsible stakeholder, as people like me predicted, and instead it's going to do what I said it was going to do, which is try to dominate Asia. So it was a remarkably foolish policy. And we were, as Secretary of State Pompeo said, asleep at the switch because we were pursuing this foolish policy. Now the question is, what do we do? And as you said, he's not too good on the solutions because, as most people understand, there are no really terrific solutions here, as I said at the end of my comments.
Okay, but Hastie, Mearsheimer, and White are broadly in agreement on the threat that China poses is increasingly assertive on the world stage, especially in our own region. However, there are a lot of scholars who believe that there are some serious weaknesses and limitations in China. I want to put to Hugh White the views of the distinguished American sinologist, Professor David Shambaugh from George Washington University. And he says, when he talks about China's weaknesses, an economy saddled with a large and growing debt burden, endemic corruption, environmental concerns, you think about the air and the water pollution, very extreme. Demographic challenges, you know, John Howard's fond of saying that China is likely to grow old before it grows rich. Hugh White, are you exaggerating China's capacities?
Well, it's just worth bearing in mind, I've got a lot of time for David Shambaugh, old and dear friend, very fine China scholar, but it's just worth making the point that precisely that list of points that you read out have been said about China every single year since it started growing. And as I said in my remarks earlier, we have consistently underestimated China's capacity to work through its problems and to keep the economy growing. And I think one of the reasons, as John said, one of the reasons why people have underestimated China as a strategic challenger, and one of the reasons why I've taken a different view for a long time, is that they've tended to convince themselves that somehow China would solve our problem for us by screwing it up. And they haven't so far. Well, that's not to say they won't. It's not to say they won't in future. All sorts of things go wrong in China. But I would just make this observation. The strategic weight, the economic weight that gives China the capacity to pose this very significant challenge to American leadership in Asia is not something that's predicated on its future development. Mm. It's already, today, far bigger relative to the United States than any country has ever been. Its GDP measured in PP terms is already bigger than America. So even if China flatlines from here, which is very unlikely to do, it will still be in a position to pose a more serious challenge to the United States than any of those previous peer competitors.
Okay, but it's not just David Shambaugh. There's a sense of history here. Owen Harries, head of policy planning in the Department of Foreign Affairs in the Fraser era, he points out that in the past century, China has experienced the collapse of a traditional regime, warlordism, civil war, invasion, a famine that killed millions in mass terror in the form of the Cultural Revolution, and of course the dramatic socio-economic changes of the last four decades. John Mearsheimer, surely such a power is not wanting to be expansionist because it's got so many of these challenges at home and the history there. How would you respond to Owen Harries?
No, the point is that China, when it was weak and it was suffering in the various ways that Tom just described, was victimized by other great powers. The Chinese talk about the century of national humiliation. China was a very weak country, and when it was weak, it was victimized by the United States, the Japanese, and the European great powers. The lesson that the Chinese have taken from that, which I believe is the correct lesson, is that you want to be extremely powerful, and you don't want any rival great powers in your region of the world. And that's why I believe the Chinese, as they now begin to grow economically, are bent on establishing regional hegemony. You know, I'm an American. The United States is the only regional hegemon in modern history. How many Americans do you think go to bed at night worrying about being attacked by Canada or Mexico? The answer is none. We have the ideal geostrategic situation. We have Canadians to the north, Mexicans to the south, fish to the east, and fish to the west. That's what you want, right? The last thing you want to do is live next to other guerrillas, because they may invade you. And if those economic problems that you describe do manifest themselves, you can rest assured that your neighbors will take advantage of you. So I think it makes perfect sense for the Chinese to try to dominate Asia. But you want to remember, it makes perfect sense for us and for you to go to great lengths to not let that happen.
The consensus in Canberra, both major parties for some time now, believe that we can ride two horses simultaneously. We can continue to have the security umbrella with the Americans and to trade indefinitely. I want to ask you, why can't we just continue to have the best of both worlds in this increasingly intense strategic competition between Beijing and Washington?
Well, because for exactly the reason that John explained, they're not going to let us. Mm. You know, the proposition we don't have to choose between America and China expresses a hope, not a reliable prediction. Whether or not we have to choose depends on them. If either of them says we have to choose, then we have to choose. And what we heard, what you heard from Pompeo over the weekend was the Americans saying, you have to choose. And what we heard from Beijing's reaction to what he'd had to say, and for that matter, Beijing's reaction to Hastie's article today, was also, you have to choose. So the fact is, we are under increasing pressure to, from both sides, to, in America's case, to support them as they push back against China, in China's side, for us not to support the United States as they push back against China. So I think it's a very, it's going to be extremely difficult, impossible really, for us to satisfy both at once. And that's the reason why the old sort of, you know, ride both horses model is not going to work.
Yeah, and on that note, John, a choice is inevitable. That's an agreement here. But, you know, as Hugh points out, and he's not alone, this is a common view in business circles in this country, that China buys double what our next largest customer, Japan, buys from us. The Chinese economy will grow much bigger than America's in coming years. I think Hugh points to Federal Treasury predictions that say that China's economy will be 80% bigger than America's in 12 years. That's from the Commonwealth Treasury. Our China ties, this is a widely held view, saved us from the global financial crisis more than a decade. To a lot of Australians, the choice would seem clear, but your point is that security trumps trade. Explain.
Well, when you're dealing with the business community, especially, which makes a lot of money dealing with the Chinese on the trade front, of course they're going to want to maintain the status quo or maybe even lean towards China. But the point that I tried to make before is that in virtually every case I know in international history, when a state is forced to choose between prosperity and security, it opts for security, because survival has to be the highest goal. This is, in a way, a tragic situation for Australia. I fully understand that Australia wants to maintain the status quo. To put it in slightly different terms that my mother would use, Australia wants its cake and eat it too. But the fact is, that world is going away. And as you said, you're going to be forced to make a choice. The United States is going to lean on you like you wouldn't believe, and the Chinese are going to lean on you like you wouldn't believe. And it has nothing to do with, you know, the United States per se, or China per se, or Australia per se. It's just the way international politics works. And great powers push hard on minor powers, or middle-range powers, and that's what's happening here. And I believe that you'll opt to side with the United States. And if you don't, as I said in my formal presentation, you should understand you'll be an enemy of the United States.
Hugh White, I mean, there's a lot of anxiety about China. I mean, there is allegations being made about Beijing's interference in our politics, fears that there have been pressures from Beijing, proxies undermining academic freedom. We keep hearing about these Confucius Institutes and whatnot. Here's a poll from the Lowy Institute a year ago. Three quarters of Australians say Canberra allows, quote, too much investment from China, especially in real estate and agriculture. So aren't those concerns absolutely legitimate and understandable?
Well, I don't put a lot of weight on people's anxiety about foreign investment, because go back through the records, people have been concerned about Japanese foreign investment, and for that matter, American foreign investment at different stages in our history. So I don't think that's the key. But I do think there's a genuine anxiety that as China's power grows, and it goes back to something that John said, living in an Asia dominated by China is not going to be a picnic. Mm. It's going to be very different and very scary. And so I think those concerns are entirely legitimate. The question is, what do we do about it? And I think the default position, and the position of some of those who've been prominent in raising these concerns, has been that, well, that's just fine. We rely on the United States to deal with China for us. Mm. Now, my whole argument is, I don't think that's going to work. I think we are going to end up, most likely, living in an Asia which is dominated, East Asia, which is dominated by China. And therefore, we have to make some tough decisions about how we protect our independence, our sovereignty, how we draw lines around how far that influence is going to go in a way that we can enforce by ourselves rather than having to rely on others. And that's one of the reasons why I think we have to be much more energetic, and I might say much more innovative, about the way we position ourselves in a region diplomatically. And I also think we have to be much more imaginative and much more energetic about the way we build the armed forces, which will constitute for us the final arbiter of how hard we can be pushed around, which is what my recent book's about.
Yes, that's Professor Hugh White, and his recent book is How to Defend Australia. It's out now from Black Ink. He's Professor of Strategic Studies at the ANU, debating Professor John Mearsheimer from the University of Chicago. And they were with Tom Switzer. It was a debate hosted by the Centre for Independent Studies. And I think that whole debate, the ABC taped the whole debate, will be up on their website this week. But that was just an edited version of an hour and a half discussion, so you may care to seek that out.